I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Welcome to this podcast of The People's Pharmacy.
You can find previous podcasts and more information on a range of health topics at peoplespharmacy.com. Plastics permeate our lives. They're in our plumbing, water bottles, and yogurt containers. Now, chemicals from plastic are in us. This is The People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
How do plasticizers end up in the foods we're eating? Consumer Reports has done a thorough investigation into this growing problem.
They found plastic compounds in beverages, canned beans, fast food, milk, and yogurt, as well as many prepared meals. How did they get there, and what can we do to avoid them?
We talk with two of the Consumer Reports experts behind this expose. Are substitutes for endocrine disruptors any safer?
Coming up on The People's Pharmacy, how to eat less plastic.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, excessive salt intake has been linked to hypertension and other cardiovascular complications. Getting people to cut back on salt is a challenge, however. That's because people like the taste of salt. Imagine chips, pretzels, or chicken soup with no salt. Is it possible to get a salty flavor without sodium chloride? Will such salt substitutes be beneficial? A new study in the Annals of Internal Medicine examined 16 randomized controlled trials of salt substitution. Over 30,000 volunteers were part of these trials. These studies showed that replacing some of the sodium chloride in salt with potassium chloride reduces sodium in urine and lowers blood pressure. The researchers also found that salt substitutes reduced mortality during the studies. Salt substitution was especially helpful for the Chinese people in the meta-analysis. Some people find the taste of potassium chloride objectionable. However, a mixture of potassium and sodium chloride seems palatable for many individuals and could help with blood pressure control and cardiovascular health.
You've likely heard the expression, sitting is the new smoking. In other words, a sedentary lifestyle puts you at significant risk for poor cardiovascular outcomes. A new study published in JAMA Network Open suggests a simple intervention could make a difference. This randomized clinical trial involved nearly 300 older adults between 60 and 89 years of age. The researchers coached half the volunteers to stand up and move around at regular intervals. They also provided the participants with wrist-worn fitness bands that reminded them to stand and measure their activity. In addition, each volunteer got a standing desk and feedback on their accelerometer data. People in the control group got coaching in healthy living topics other than standing. The intervention was successful in getting people to decrease the amount of time they spent sitting during the day. In addition, systolic blood pressure dropped significantly. The average reduction in systolic blood pressure was about 3.5 points, which is comparable to the effects of most blood pressure medications. The scientists conclude that reducing sitting time could be a practical strategy for promoting cardiometabolic health in older populations.
For decades, anyone who experienced a heart attack was routinely prescribed a beta blocker medication upon discharge from the hospital. These are medications designed to slow down the heart. They include drugs like atenolol, metoprolol, and propranolol. Most cardiologists assumed that such drugs would prevent a second heart attack. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine challenges this belief. Over 5,000 heart attack patients in New Zealand, Sweden, and Estonia were randomized to receive either metoprolol or bisoprolol, or no beta blocker treatment. The study started in September of 2017, and the median follow-up time was about 3.5 years. The researchers recorded whether study participants had a second heart attack or died during the study. There was a slight difference between groups, but the difference was not significant. The trial was distinguished by its large size and long duration and suggests that beta blocker treatment will not improve survival after a heart attack. No one should ever stop a beta blocker suddenly, however. Doing so might trigger heart problems.
People with heart conditions are often advised to avoid non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Such medications have been linked to high blood pressure, fluid retention, atrial fibrillation, and even heart attacks. That's why healthcare professionals often recommend acetaminophen as an alternative to NSAIDs. A new study presented at the American Physiology Summit meetings suggests that the advice may be misplaced. The scientists utilized a mouse model and discovered that acetaminophen altered over 20 signaling pathways in the heart. Because this research was conducted in mice, clinical trials will be necessary to verify the impact of acetaminophen on the human heart. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Plastic has become part of the infrastructure of our daily lives. Our water pipes are made out of plastic. More importantly, almost all of our food containers are plastic, which is lightweight and durable. But that means we don't really know how to eliminate plastic from our environment. Microscopic bits of plastic can be found in our water and in the food we eat.
To find out more about plastic compounds and how they've penetrated our food supply, we turn to health journalist Lauren Friedman. She's currently the lead health editor at Consumer Reports and is an adjunct lecturer at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at City University of New York.
Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Lauren Friedman.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Lauren, when we were in graduate school, now that was like 50 years ago or more, we actually met someone who edited a newsletter for the plastics industry. They knew that plastic ingredients got into things. Into like bottles, water bottles, or into food containers. And I became kind of obsessed about that and told my family, let's avoid plastic. Was I wrong?
It sounds like you were ahead of your time, honestly, because I think for a long time, there was a lot of focus on how miraculous plastic was. It can do so many things. It can take so many different forms. It's a very useful material. And I think within the past couple of decades, it's become clearer and clearer that that comes with some significant risks. And that I think you were right, that there are a lot of plastic chemicals that can get into food and all kinds of things and ultimately end up in our bodies. And they've been linked to a wide variety of potential harms. So I think you're ahead of your time.
It's pretty clear that the industry actually did know that the plasticizers were leaching. From the container into the contents, and they didn't really want anybody else to know that at that point in time. So we have been very skeptical about plastics for a long time, but we were delighted to see your article in Consumer Reports, How to Eat Less Plastic. And what I would like to know, please, Lauren, how does plastic get into food? How do these chemicals make their way into what we're eating?
Well, there are a few ways. There are actually many points at which plastic can get into food. So a lot of people are very focused on packaging. But what we've found through reporting this is that plastic can enter the food at all these different stages. So first of all, the plastic that you put into the trash degrades in landfills, and those chemicals leach out into the water and into the soil. And the same thing happens when plastic is incinerated. These chemicals end up in the air. They settle on the ground. Microplastics can be generated during production, during use, also during disposal. And plastic is also used in agriculture and in production directly. There's plastic mulch, sometimes used over farm fields. There are animals who may be consuming contaminated water and plants. And then throughout the production process, workers may be wearing vinyl gloves, which are made with plasticizers. Your food may be traveling through plastic tubing that can leach these plasticizers. And then ultimately at the final stage, it can also leach from the packaging into your food.
Well, you know, I think people imagine that plastic is somehow impermeable. I mean, it seems indestructible. It's a great way to store stuff. And yet, I guess what you're sharing with us is that that's not true.
Yeah, I think that was something that people assumed for a long time. And it's not true. And it's especially not true with plasticizers. And those are a chemical used often to make plastic more flexible. So it's used in a lot of tubing. It used to be used pretty commonly in plastic wraps. And those are not chemically bound sort of to the rest of the plastic. So they leach out very easily. And that's why it's especially important to not heat plastic, because that can really speed up leaching.
Well, I often wonder about all of the beverages now that are in plastic. Vinegar, for example, not a beverage, but a food. But juice, most juice is in plastic and it's acidic. And of course, now you can go into a liquor store and you can buy vodka in plastic. And I think about alcoholic beverages as being great dissolvers. You know, ethanol, it pulls stuff out. So all of those containers, especially liquids, seem like they would be bad news in plastic.
Yeah, it's a good question. We didn't test enough different things to say vinegar is worse to have in plastic than green tea or something like that, but it's certainly a reasonable theory.
Well, I will say that Joe and I have made a concerted effort over the many years that we've been trying to avoid plastic chemicals to buy things that come in glass bottles. It has become much more difficult. There are fewer and fewer products, especially things like juice, that are available in glass. I'm wondering if you could give us some tips on how we as individuals can avoid plastic in our foods. How can we minimize the plasticizers that we're getting?
I think a big message is that there's a lot you can't do, that there's a lot that we sort of need industry and regulators to respond to so that the burden is not all on individuals. But there is a lot you can do. And some of the key tips that we recommend are avoiding plastic food storage containers. That is, when you buy food storage containers to store your food in, those should be glass, steel. There are lots of great options that are not plastic. There are certain types of food that sort of carry more of these plastic chemicals, such as fast foods and high fat foods. And highly processed foods, just because there's so many more opportunities for those to come into contact with plasticizers. So as much as you can eat fresh, unpackaged fruits and vegetables, the more of that, the better. And then when you're cooking in the kitchen, that should be a place where you try to minimize plastic. You can choose wood, stainless steel, silicone. You can choose water bottles that are made of glass and steel. And then there are also ways you can avoid these sorts of chemicals outside of the food space. Just by limiting your use of vinyl. There are a lot of plasticizers in vinyl, shower curtains, flooring, car interiors. You can avoid fragrances, which are actually made with similar types of chemicals, though it doesn't seem like plastic. Keep your windows open, refuse receipts. Those are a few of the tips that we recommend.
Refuse receipts. What's that about?
So thermal paper receipts, the ones that are glossy and pretty common, those are often coated in bisphenols. So you especially worry about people who are handing them out all day long. But even if you're kind of taking a lot of them and, you know, carrying them in your hand, those have bisphenols on them.
So you just say, no, thank you. And they can throw them out right there.
Right now, there's often an option. No receipt. Email my receipt. You know, it's not to say you can never take a receipt when you need one for a reimbursement. But just that's one of the ways you can minimize it, is to stop taking those all day long.
Now, what about cans? I mean, so much food comes in cans. So many beverages come in cans, beer, soft drinks. If they're not plastic, they're cans. The coating that they use used to be bisphenol A, if I'm not mistaken. Is it safer now?
That's a tricky question to answer because, as with many of these things, without testing it, we don't know for sure. This is not something that companies are required to disclose. You're correct that a lot of can linings for canned foods used to be BPA, which is bisphenol A. A lot of companies have replaced that with other types of bisphenols, which are very similar. We call that a regrettable substitution because it's different, but not necessarily safer. So we don't know for sure, but a can say BPA-free and still be lined with something quite similar.
Lauren, you suggested that the full impact should not lie with the individual consumer, that industry and regulators should be taking some responsibility for reducing the amount of plasticizer in our foods. How will that happen?
It's a great question. There's been a lot of pressure on regulators and on industry to change these things. I think we're seeing growing consumer awareness, and people should know that your dollar has power, that when BPA was banned from baby bottles and formula cans about 10 years ago, that was really in response to growing consumer awareness and concern around that. That was the industry really responding to the fact that parents were wanting not to buy bottles that had BPA in them. So I think that it's something that consumers can put pressure on their elected officials and on the companies that they buy from to change some of these things. Consumer Reports has put pressure on the FDA to ban a lot of the phthalates that come into contact with food. And there are a lot of other consumer groups that are trying to do that as well. So really, we'd like to see a lot of our regulations catch up with the science.
Were there any foods in the list that you tested that really jumped out at you and surprised you with how much they had in the way of plasticizers like phthalates?
Well, I think there were some that stood out. A lot of the fast foods had very high levels of phthalates. And we were also surprised to see that whether a food was organic did not seem to have any effect on the level of phthalates. There was no correlation there that we could see.
Lauren, you mentioned the idea that they come up with substitutes and everybody thinks, oh, that's great. There's no BPA in my water bottle anymore. I'm home free. And you mentioned phthalates. Moe's Southwest Grill Chicken Burrito has very high levels of phthalate substitutes, which may be as harmful as the chemicals they replace. I think that comes as a real surprise to people. They think, oh, well, if it's going to be a new and better product, it shouldn't have anything that hasn't been tested. Sounds like that may be a hypothesis that needs to be reconsidered.
Yes, I think there are a lot of replacements that we don't necessarily know for sure that they're equally harmful, but we don't know as much about them. So often we find that over time, we find that they're as bad or possibly more bad than the chemical that they're replacing. And usually, because these sort of health issues unfold over so many years, it takes a long time to figure that out.
I was blown away with the fact that Wendy's crispy chicken nuggets paper board, I'm not quite sure what that means, had almost 34,000 phthalates per serving in nanograms. How could crispy chicken nuggets have phthalates in them?
So keep in mind, these are nanograms, so it's not like you would necessarily taste the plastic. But some of the ways that these could get into your crispy chicken nuggets is, first of all, the paper board could be coated with something. The paper itself could be contaminated. The workers who put those chicken nuggets right in that little paperboard container for you could be wearing vinyl gloves. When you touch hot food with vinyl gloves, some of the plasticizers could leach right off. And the chicken could have been eating, you know, food that had plasticizers in it, drinking water that had plasticizers in it. So if you think about sort of the life cycle of a chicken nugget, there are a lot of potential points where these contaminants could enter the food, including at the final stage.
Lauren, I don't think you tested for this, but it's always fascinated me, and that would be paper cups. And in particular, when you go to the local coffee shop and they put your coffee into a paper cup. But in order for it not to leak, I think they have to coat it with plastic. Any idea what the impact of very hot coffee is on the plasticizers in that paper cup?
I don't know off the top of my head what type of plastic coffee cups tend to be coated with. We couldn't really know for sure without testing it, whether that was plasticizers in particular, some other type of chemicals that are used in the making of plastic. But it does seem like that's the default now, that even when you get a simple paper cup, it is often lined with plastic.
What about milk? You know, when I was growing up, the milkman would actually deliver milk in glass bottles.
My goodness, you're old.
I am. Nobody can even imagine that anymore. But when we buy milk in the supermarket, it's almost always in plastic. And even when it seems like it's paper, it's probably plastic on the inside.
That's true. That's been a pretty big shift. You know, you still can get milk in glass bottles, you know, often from the farmer's market or something like that. But it has become the default that milk, even when it appears to be in a carton, is lined with plastic, or you're getting it in a plastic bottle. And that's true with a lot of other dairy products too.
So, Lauren, I'm going to ask you to go up to the 30,000 feet level, you know, be out in that jet plane and look down on all of the food that is now being contaminated either with nano or microplastics or is leaching plastic into the food, and then down to the snail level of, you know, maybe half an inch. Big picture, and then the micro level, what we can do ourselves.
Big picture, I think the key things to do are to focus on the things that you can control, that from a zoomed out level, when you see that you can choose plastic or choose another option, choose the other option, especially if it's something like glass or wood or steel, because those are ways that you can not only reduce your own exposure to plastic, but reduce the amount of plastic that is ending up in the trash and continuing this cycle of contamination. And from a micro level, I think there are a lot of small decisions that you can make throughout your day, including look at our chart and our story, and you can think about there are often similar foods, and one will have higher rates of phthalates than another. So sometimes you can make informed options. You can reach out to companies and ask them, you're interested in this, you're a consumer, can you tell me more? What do you do to control this in your food? And I think food is a really critical place to look because we all have to eat.
So your recommendation, less fast food, less plastic, more natural products.
Yes, more fresh food, more minimally processed food. Those are good tips.
Lauren Friedman, thank you so much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with you.
You've been listening to Lauren Friedman, a health and science journalist, writer, and editor. She's currently lead health editor at Consumer Reports and an adjunct lecturer at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. The Consumer Reports investigation was published in the February 2024 issue, How to Eat Less Plastic.
After the break, we'll turn to Lauren Friedman's colleague at Consumer Reports, Dr. James Rogers.
How did he get interested in plastic contamination in food?
He'll tell us about the research Consumer Reports did on plasticizers and phthalates in some very popular brands.
We'll find out which common foods have high levels of these endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
Sometimes, apparently, similar products have very different levels of contamination. How did that happen?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
This podcast is made possible in part by Cocovia, backed by 20 years of scientific research and the maker of the most proven and concentrated flavanol extract in the market today, CocoPro Coco Extract. Coco flavanols are among the most studied plant-based bioactives today and are clinically proven to promote cardiovascular and brain health for the long term, supporting a strong heart and better memory.
Get 15% off your order of any Cocovia product by using the discount code PPOD15. Learn more at Cocovia. And remember, that discount code is PPOD15.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. Cocovia Memory Plus is formulated with 750 milligrams of cocoa flavanols, a level clinically proven to improve three different types of memory and support brain function. More information at cocovia.com.
We're surrounded by plastic. Scientists are discovering that the chemicals from plastic containers actually end up in the beverages we drink and the food we eat. The most worrisome compounds are phthalates and bisphenols, such as BPA. But there are others. How do they get into our food?
Flexible tubing made of plastic is used throughout the food industry. Pasteurization requires high temperatures that may leach plastic from containers into the milk we drink. Plastic compounds can move from our trash into soil and water and eventually into the food supply.
A few months ago, Consumer Reports ran a cover story titled, How to Eat Less Plastic. What can we learn from its investigation?
We turn now to Dr. James Rogers. He's the Director of Food Safety Research and Testing at Consumer Reports. He's responsible for leading the food safety and sustainability operations of the organization, including food testing, data analysis, and risk and safety assessments. As acting head of product safety testing, he also oversees the team that assesses safe operation and use of consumer products.
Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. James Rogers.
Thank you for having me today, Terry.
Dr. Rogers, when most people think about Consumer Reports, they think about TVs, they think about tires, cars, cell phones. They don't always think about food, but you're Director of Food Safety Research and Testing. How did you get interested in plastics in food containers?
So Consumer Reports has a very robust team that tests food for different types of contaminants. And so what we do is we look at the public health literature to see what could possibly be out there that is contaminating our food. And we look at both chemical contamination and microbiological contamination. And so my chemists, in looking at the literature, notice that there could be some issues with food and these plasticizers. Additionally, back in 2009, we had tested food for the plasticizer bisphenol A. And so we, number one, wanted to repeat that test to see if it's gotten any better. And number two, we wanted to test the food for the new chemical to us, phthalates.
And you were looking at plasticizers, which are what?
So I want to make the distinction between plasticizers and plastic. You may have seen in the news a number of recent reports on microplastic or nanoplastic.
Yeah.
Those are the actual physical pieces of plastic that are very, very small that can end up in our water and the food. What we tested for are the chemicals called plasticizers, which are used in the manufacture of plastic to give them certain characteristics of stiffness or flexibility, et cetera. So we tested the chemicals, not for the actual plastic.
Now, you did a really impressive panel of tests. I mean, you chose almost 100 different foods to test. How did you pick them?
So what we did is, as I mentioned before, we did do a literature review to see if there is an issue out there. And then we wanted to test as many types of food just to see how extensive this contamination is. Once we picked the types of food, which included yogurt, soda, fast food, meat, poultry, seafood, and canned fruits and vegetables, we then did a market analysis to see what were the top sellers in these categories, making the assumptions that these are the ones that are consumed the most. And then once we figured out what were the top sellers within this group of foods we wanted to test, then we go out to retail stores or online and we actually purchase what consumers themselves will purchase and have those tested.
Let's zero in on something called phthalates. And I'm going to ask you to spell it because it's not pronounced the way it's spelled.
No, it's hard to spell.
And why phthalates in particular?
Okay, so let me spell it for you first. It's P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S. And when you pronounce it, ignore the first P-H. So just pretend like it's just T-H-A, so phthalates.
And why? Why would you pick on them?
So again, the literature suggested to us that these chemicals were seeping into our food, either during growth or production. And we know from the literature, again, that they can cause a number of different health concerns for consumers. So we wanted to look at phthalates, what they're calling phthalate substitutes, because we actually have seen that for some manufacturers of these chemicals, they will make new ones. So we wanted to not only test the old generation, but the more recently produced ones. And as I mentioned, the bisphenols, which included bisphenol A. And the reason is, again, the literature search told us that these could be an issue for the health of consumers. So we wanted to see where are they and how much of them are there and which ones are there.
Were you at all surprised by the results?
Oh, I was totally surprised, Terry, because I did not know the contamination would be so extensive. Our article reports that out of 85 different products, 84 of them were positive for phthalates. And for the bisphenols, 79% of the products were positive for bisphenols. Now, the bisphenol amount was lower, which is a bit of good news in this set of testing than when we tested in 2009. But again, they were still there and they were still in many, many food products, which was a little bit sad, actually, because some of the food that we found positive were some of the things I enjoyed eating.
Well, we do too. And I have to admit that when I started looking at the list, I was shocked. And I think most people up until now, they go, oh, yeah, that's all theoretical. I've heard about phthalates. I've heard about BPA. It doesn't affect me. Until you look at the foods you tested. I mean, for example, Annie's organic cheesy ravioli in a can. I mean, that seems like that should be fine. 53,579. It was at the top of your prepared meals. Then there's chicken of the sea, pink salmon in water, skinless, boneless in a can. 24,321. Also at the top of your list. But we can go back and find Hormel chili with beans in the can. 9,800. We can find Lipton brisk lemonade in the can. We can find Wendy's crispy chicken nuggets.
I think, Joe, you should be quiet and let James say something.
Say something, Jim. I'm surprised. This is unbelievable.
Well, you pointed out Annie's organic cheesy ravioli. One thing I wanted to point out about that and the general finding that we report on is that some people think your organic food is safer. Well, it is in certain aspects, but not for these chemicals. It is not, organic food is not typically restricted or tested for the presence of these chemicals and then any action taken just because they're organic. Another way to put that is even organic can have these chemicals in them and be just as worrisome. The other thing that we have reported on is that you can find these chemicals in the same types of products from different producers, but they will have different amounts. And you can even look at, for instance, the Chef Boyardee Big Bowl Beefaroni Pasta and Meat Sauce was less than the Beefaroni Pasta and Tomato and Meat Sauce. So from the same manufacturer, from the same producer, you have two different products, and you can see differences in those products, even though they come from the same manufacturer and have similar ingredients also.
Do we have any idea why?
Well, we don't have any really strong evidence, but we have some ideas. It could be sourcing. So the, for instance, pasta that ended up in the big bowl may be a different pasta sourced differently than from the beefaroni pasta. It could be two different plants. We could have certain manufacturing plants that have more issues with phthalates in the manufacturing process. But we really don't know because we don't have the data to really nail this down, but we can speculate.
Now, Dr. Rogers, I have to tell you that here on the People's Pharmacy, we have been talking about endocrine disruptors for more than 40 years. Going way back to alligators in a Florida lake. And nobody seemed to care. And I'm not even sure anybody cares now. And so I guess I'm going to ask you, you know, why, A, has the industry basically say, don't worry, be happy, so low, no problem? And yet there are endocrinologists and researchers who say, well, wait a minute, endocrine disruptors can cause diabetes and obesity and cardiovascular disease and cancer and birth defects and premature birth and neurodevelopmental problems. It seems like they're not talking to each other.
Well, I can only speculate because I don't work for the industry. But I think that there may be two basic reasons. Number one is that we don't believe that our federal regulatory agencies, and in this case, the primary one would be the FDA, regulates these chemicals as hazards like they should. And so if your listeners and you read the article, you see we have a petition and we're calling on the FDA to actually remove these phthalates from any food contact surfaces that the manufacturers may have, because that could be a way to transfer these chemicals into the food as it's being made. And so that's the first call, because we believe there's no safe concentration of phthalates, and we're calling on the FDA to do something, to regulate these chemicals, get them out of our foods. The second thing is we are calling on the manufacturers to look at their processes and see, where are these chemicals getting into our food? Is it the raw ingredients that you use to make our food? Is it the plastic belts and tubing that you use in the machinery to make our food? Is it the vinyl gloves that your workers are wearing when they handle our food? And so we want the manufacturers to look and see, maybe you have a problematic plant that has phthalates and needs to be intensely cleaned, or maybe even closed and send the work somewhere else. But we are asking the manufacturers to take responsibility and really look into this so we can get these chemicals out of our food.
I would like to ask about the potential health consequences. What do we know about that?
So, as you mentioned, these are a group of chemicals called endocrine disruptors, which can modulate, which means they can determine if a hormone is manufactured in the human body and how much of that hormone. And even though this is a chronic long-term problem, which means that you're exposed to phthalates over a length of time, so it's hard to really nail down that particular phthalate caused that problem, they have been associated with obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular diseases. Certain cancers have been associated with these chemicals, causing birth defects, premature birth, neurodevelopmental disorders in the children, and infertility. And again, we think we say that they're long-term chronic, so maybe that makes it a little bit difficult to regulate, but they are there, and we're convinced they're there, and the problems are there. And so that's why we did this research, and that's why we're advocating for change.
When you say neurodevelopmental problems in children, that certainly sounds concerning, but what actually are we talking about? That terminology is just a little bit abstract.
So when we read about neurodevelopmental disorders, the concerns are if you're exposing these children in the uterus or as they're growing up to these chemicals, the concern that we have is, are you affecting their IQ? Are you affecting the normal development of the neurological pathways, the nerves and et cetera, in a child so that they will be able to learn and to grow healthy, the same as children that may not be exposed to these chemicals, exposed to it at the same concentration or levels?
You know, Dr. Rogers, one of the things that concerns me is that humans are pretty good at recognizing toxicity. If they eat something bad and an hour later they start throwing up or they develop digestive tract problems, we are very bad at discovering problems if it takes months, years, or in some cases decades, like cancer, to develop. How do we get politicians and other, you know, experts to begin to recognize that, well, yeah, the side effects that you're talking about, the complications that are associated with phthalates and other plasticizers, may take a very long time to show up?
Well, this is a study that's similar to some of our previous studies where we looked at heavy metals in water. And a lot of the other chemicals, they tend to be at the concentrations we're seeing, and a chronic problem that takes long to develop. So what we're doing and other consumer groups are doing are trying to look at the front end, which is how are you bringing these chemicals into your body, associate it with the scientific and medical information that talks about the damage to the body that can happen, and then use different tools such as our petitions and our food advocacy to try to convince lawmakers, the manufacturers, that this is a real problem and something needs to be done. Along with the petitions, and in fact, the consumer can join those petitions we ask them to. We also say become an informed consumer so you know how to shop and avoid these contaminants and vote with your dollars. Write the companies and tell them, I saw Consumers Reports on your Chef Boyardee pasta and I'm alarmed at the results. What are you going to do about this? Because if you don't, I'm not going to buy your product. And so there, write your congressman yourself, consumers, and let them know, I saw this report, I'm concerned. What are you doing about it at the congressional level to fix this? Write the FDA. And so I think the consumers will have to get engaged and be aware and be a very knowledgeable and informed consumer that will drive their actions that maybe will drive these others to do something about it.
You're listening to Dr. James Rogers, Director of Food Safety Research and Testing at Consumer Reports. He's responsible for leading the food safety and sustainability operations of the organization, including food testing, data analysis, and risk and safety assessments.
After the break, the convenience factor may make it hard to avoid plastic in food packaging.
What does Dr. Rogers recommend to his friends and family members to help reduce their exposure?
Some companies have removed BPA and found a substitute. What do we know about these replacement compounds?
Is there any agency that follows up on the safety of these new chemicals?
How would Dr. Rogers suggest we approach food to be safer?
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Urea Skin Relief from The People's Pharmacy. After years of work, we've gotten the formula just right. We're delighted to be offering this intensive skin therapy with 20% urea.
Urea Skin Relief Cream is not your average moisturizer. Formulated with a unique blend of urea and plant-based ingredients, it's specifically designed to deeply hydrate and soothe even the most stubborn dry skin. Whether you're battling the effects of harsh weather or you have sensitive skin that's prone to irritation, this cream works wonders.
Urea is a powerhouse ingredient. Not only does it act as a humectant, drawing moisture into the skin, it also beefs up the skin's barrier function. We're just as proud of what you won't find in our Urea Skin Relief Cream, no parabens or phthalates. Creating a cream for dry skin free of these common endocrine-disrupting preservatives and plasticizers was what motivated us to make this product.
We're offering a limited-time discount for People's Pharmacy podcast listeners. You can get 20% off either the handy 2-ounce size or the hefty 6-ounce size of the People's Pharmacy Urea Skin Relief. You'll find them both in the body care section of the store at peoplespharmacy.com.
Make sure you put the code PP20 into the discount code box when you check out. That's capital P, capital P, PP20 for 20% off your urea skin relief purchase through May 31, 2024 at peoplespharmacy.com. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Cocovia Dietary Supplements. Cocovia Memory and Focus is a unique formula that works to promote attention and support long-term memory. It supports five areas of brain performance. More information at cocovia.com.
Americans love convenience. Nothing could be easier than popping a frozen meal wrapped in plastic into the microwave. In seconds, lunch is ready. Is there a cost for such convenience?
We're talking with Dr. James Rogers, Director of Food Safety Research and Testing at Consumer Reports. He's responsible for leading the food safety and sustainability operations of the organization, including food testing, data analysis, and risk and safety assessments.
Dr. Rogers, you've suggested that consumers need to get involved, and yet there's a kind of a push-pull problem. Convenience. We love convenience. You know, if we can just pop that plastic container into the microwave, hit 2 minutes, and boom, it's ready, it's hot, yum,
and it's
yum.
A big mistake.
Yeah, so how do we convince people that convenience may not be worth the health risks? And while you're at it, let's talk about plastic in microwaves.
Well, let's take the plastic in microwaves first. We've put a number of articles out there trying to convince consumers not to use plastic when they heat their food up in microwaves, even if they say it's microwave safe, because chemicals like these can leach out of the plastic and it comes faster and easier when you heat the plastic and get into the food. So no plastic in the microwaves when you're reheating food. In fact, I've replaced my containers with glass.
And that's what we do too. Either put it into a safe glass container or a bowl or a plate that's able to go into the microwave.
Yes. And so that's very, very good practice in the kitchen. That's wise. And I think also to answer the first part of your question is it's consumer education. It's what we're doing right now. And your microphone and your voice into the community that will educate consumers to say maybe convenience is not worth it if you're exposing your children and yourself to these chemicals. And so it's just consumer education. And that's probably what I do a third or a fourth of my day, is trying to work on getting consumers aware, knowing where to go get information that they can trust and believe. It's not TikTok, it's not Instagram, it's from organizations like ours that's science-based and other organizations that can guide consumers on how they can eat safer.
Well, part of the problem, Dr. Rogers, is you can't see phthalates, you can't see bisphenol A, you can't see plasticizers in the food.
And you can't taste it.
And so it seems like, okay, if I can't see it, I can't smell it, maybe I can't taste it, it's not a problem. But we read a book some years ago by a couple of authors called Slow Death by Rubber Duck. And they actually did some testing, and they said, you know, choice makes a difference.
Yes.
What you choose to put in your body can have a profound impact on your levels of phthalates or things like BPA. So what kinds of recommendations do you make when you're advising friends or family or the public at large?
Well, probably the vast majority of the things that you put in your body from your food that can hurt you, you can't smell it, you can't taste it. It doesn't change the color of the food or anything. So you can't see it and you can't use your senses to judge whether you should consume this or not. In fact, the bacteria that cause your food to spoil tend to not make it dangerous to you for the most part. Now it can. But once a food is to the point where you can visually or smell a difference, that food is so far gone, you probably don't want to eat it anyway. So the first principle is that the majority of stuff that can hurt you in your food, you can't see, smell, taste. And so that's not a good measure for that. The best thing that we can say is learn good, safe food practices. My daughter calls me all the time to ask me, I've left my cabbage, head of cabbage out all night. Is it safe?
What do you say?
And so, oh yeah, because most of your fresh vegetables are kept at room temperature in the grocery store until they're sold, right?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, she tells me I should write a book, but I really don't have the time to do that. But, so again, an educated consumer and going to the sources that will help you make sure that if the food you are consuming has a potential danger, what can you do to prevent that danger from harming you and your family? So, for instance, we talk about safe food handling, making sure your refrigerator is at the right temperature, making sure you don't eat leftovers past 3 days, making sure that you are only eating the inside leaves of a head of lettuce instead of the outside, because the outside leaves tend to be more contaminated. And so there is food safety information out there to help you keep yourself and your family safe, but you just have to access it, read it, and then put it into practice.
I did not know that about a head of lettuce.
Oh, yes.
But frequently when I'm making salad, I have my dogs standing next to me saying, give us the outside leaves. Is it safe to give it to dogs?
You have to look up the veterinary information to see what things are safe. So, for instance, we feed our dog, we have a Yorkie cucumber. She loves it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we all know as dog lovers, you can't give them chocolate because
right.
it can hurt.
Or raisins.
Them, right?
Those things
or
are
raisins,
very
right.
toxic to dogs.
Right. And so, again, educated consumer, educated dog owner, you just have to ask the questions, what's safe from my table that I can feed my dog? I mean, my Yorkie is a notorious beggar. And so whatever I'm eating, she's at my feet, hoping yeah. I will drop something or toss her something. So I have to be careful. For instance, I like spicy Indian food. She does not like it, so don't give it to her.
So. Well, dogs are optimists. That's
yes.
just the nature of the beast.
They do not give up.
Now, Dr. Rogers, one of the headlines in the Consumer Reports article, How to Eat Less Plastic, is why chemical substitutes may not be better. And I remember when there was that whole baby bottle thing with bisphenol A, and everybody was like, okay, bisphenol A free, no bisphenol A. But we later learned, but they've substituted a different bisphenol, and it may not be any safer. And I'm wondering if that's true of phthalates as well.
Well, it is, but let me address the first thing you said about the title. I was a little bit concerned about that title because we did not test for microplastics. And I think I've mentioned that before. We test for the chemicals that make up plastic. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that sometimes the microplastic can be an issue too, because they themselves can leach these chemicals too. So even though they're very, very small, they can still leach these plasticizers. So there is that. Why we talked about the substitutes is I mentioned in the article, we tested the phthalates, but also phthalate substitutes. And so what can happen is that if an organization like us will call out, let's say, bisphenol A, because the manufacturers of that plastic still want to use some type of chemical to give it particular characteristics, they will go into the lab and make another plasticizer. So instead of bisphenol A, maybe bisphenol P, for instance. Now, the question is that substitute any safer? What tends to happen is that they will make a new bisphenol, but they will not test it for safety. They will just assume that it's safe, right? And so that's why we called out specifically both the original plasticizers, but also their replacement or substitute plasticizers too. And we tested for them too in our story.
In theory, is there an agency that would be responsible for following up on those new compounds to see whether or not they have health risks?
So, you know, we could probably do a whole story on food regulatory responsibilities. Here's what can happen. So are you familiar with the generally regarded as safe
yes.
rule with the FDA? Okay.
Roughly speaking,
yes. So what
yes.
can happen? Yes. Okay. So what the manufacturers of, let's say they invented a new phthalate, they can ask that based on this is similar to a previous phthalate and that has not been shown to be harmful, et cetera. So let's assume that it's safe. And the FDA may or may not, but probably will grant them the ability to use this alternative plasticizer, this new one. What we would say is that every company that makes these and wants to include it in plastic should show some type of evidence, some type of testing to say, yes, this is a new one and it is not as bad as the old one, and let's consider it safe. The FDA, with its limited resources, probably would not be able to do that. It may have to go out to an academic institution to test, whatever. But somebody should be responsible for demonstrating that the chemical is safe. And we believe it's primarily the manufacturer of these plasticizers, maybe even the food container companies that make these containers and say, yes, they're safe for contact with food, but someone really needs to be responsible for this.
Dr. Rogers, you made a point at the very beginning of our conversation to distinguish between plastics and plasticizers.
Yes.
But now we are hearing about these nanoparticles, these microplastics
yes.
that are in, like, for example, bottled water.
Yes.
And possibly in a lot of our food as well. So it's not just plasticizers anymore, although that worries us a lot, but it's also microplastics, these tiny, invisible little plastic particles. It seems like a double whammy.
Well, one thing I want to caution is that, number one, and we've talked a couple of times about the difference between the chemicals and the actual physical pieces of small plastic shavings or pieces that are broken off. Two points I want to make. Number one, we know that they're there because we have either seen them in a microscope. There is some new technology that's been developed to actually look at the nanoplastics, which are even smaller. But the second point is we don't know right now what the true health effects are. I was just reading a paper this morning before our interview, and we have not yet associated illnesses or problems, health problems, with the presence of these plastics, nanoplastics and microplastics. So we don't know yet. We just know that they're there. And probably the third point is that it's difficult to test for them. I'm actually looking for a lab right now to see, can Consumer Reports add to this detection of these particles in food and water. But it's difficult to find a lab to be able to do that, especially at the nano or the very, very small level. And so I think right now we're waiting to see, can we associate specifically illnesses or death to the presence of microplastics? What is the amount that you need to consume to start seeing the effects, and some of those other questions? We just don't have the answers right now. At least I'm not aware of them.
And of course, it would be difficult to separate out the presence of nanoplastic particles themselves from perhaps the plasticizers they might be releasing.
Yes.
Dr. Rogers, I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit more about a petition that Consumer Reports has launched. How can we find out more about it? What is the goal?
So the goal is to take this petition to the various manufacturers of food where we tested and detected high levels of these plasticizers in the food, the phthalates, and to ask them, with the backing of consumers signing this petition, to do something about this chemical contamination in food. We also will take the petition, and as I mentioned, we will petition the FDA to ban the use of these plasticizers in any plastic that is in contact with our food during manufacture. And so using at least those two areas, we will hope the petition, and we get thousands and thousands of consumers to sign it, will be a impetus or a nudge or something to get the manufacturers and the FDA to do something about this. All of our petitions, we usually put a link in the story, which you can find on cr.org, for you to sign the petition. And it's usually toward the bottom of the story. And so consumers can read the story. It's in front of the paywall, so it's free. Or you can buy the magazine on your newsstand. We would love for you to become a member. And you can see all of our petitions linked to the stories where we're trying to get something done in Congress and with the manufacturers themselves.
And of course, there's a link to that story from our website.
Dr. Rogers, you talked about the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and why it is responsible for the safety of the food we consume and all of these chemicals, whether it's phthalates or BPA, bisphenol A type products, or other kinds of plastics or plasticizers that are in our food. But what about in our medical equipment? I mean, I think about the intravenous tubes, the plastic, I'll call them corks, even though they're just plastic, over IV bottles. I'm thinking about all of the plastic that's used in medicine today, and I'm guessing that the same chemicals that we're concerned about in our food are leaching into our medicines, into our IV bags, into our IV tubes when we're in the hospital. And I'm wondering, why isn't the FDA concerned about them?
Well, you make a good point because, as you noted, the FDA is in charge of the safety of the vast majority of our food, not all of it, because the USDA Food Safety Inspection Service is in charge of the meat. But you're totally correct. They're in charge of medical devices also. So they are responsible for making sure that our medical devices are safe and that the problems that we've discussed about food would not happen with them also. So you asked me why. I'm a food microbiologist by training, but I do know that the FDA is in charge of medical devices too. So it's kind of hard to justify that we don't know the status of plasticizer chemicals and medical devices in the tubing, et cetera, but a very, very interesting area for the FDA to look into. And maybe if I have the resources, I'm also in charge of product safety at Consumer Reports. Maybe we can look at some of those items also in the next fiscal year as we're designing our testing programs.
And Dr. Rogers, finally, if we were to come into your house and look at the containers in which you are storing food, in which you're microwaving, in which you're buying products, what would we see?
Well, what you would see is a stack of about 8 glass bowls in a cabinet next to the microwave so that anyone who uses the microwave can use those glass bowls instead of plastic. What you will see below my microwave to the right of the stove is a dwindling stash of plastic containers that we would get when we, for instance, purchase Chinese food, etc. And dwindling because I'm slowly getting rid of those and moving toward glass. What you would see in my drawer is parchment paper, which we try to use instead of plastic wrap or something like that to store our food. And so the Rogers household is not all the way there, but we're making progress in eliminating as much plastic from our container storage as possible. And then in the food, we try to eat as fresh and as healthy as possible. I don't like salad, so I have to make up my vegetables from other means. But we're making progress, especially after this story. And after some of the other stories that I've worked on, such as water, et cetera, in making our household safer too.
I do have one final question, and that has to do with non-stick surfaces. If we dial back about 40 years, Teflon was the latest and greatest.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we heard, oh, maybe not so great, but you can still find a lot of non-stick products on the market. Are they safe? And what kinds of frying pans or cooking utensils do you use when it comes to cooking food on the stove?
So I'm not as well versed in that because, again, I just acquired product safety on my side, but Consumer Reports have written a number of stories that make me personally lean toward more toward the ceramic coated frying pans and Dutch ovens, etc. We recently did a story about testing some of these coated frying pans for PFAS or the forever chemicals and made recommendations about our findings there. It was a small study, and so we need to do more. But my major go-to skillet is a cast iron skillet that I've seasoned with vegetable oil in the oven. And so that does, I do most of my frying there. And then we also have a copper deep fryer that we use too. And so that's kind of how we tended to avoid the Teflon or the other type of nonstick frying pans.
Dr. Rogers, in the minute we have left, how would you like our listeners to begin thinking about food, shopping for food, and eating their food in a safer way?
So this is one of those perfect stories to help consumers think about eating safer. Number one, we say become an informed consumer, read and find out what are some of the things that you can do to make sure that the food that you purchase, the food that you store, the food that you cook, is as safe as possible, safe food preparation, et cetera. We also want our consumers and the people that are listening to you to look at joining our petition and spreading the information throughout your family and your friends to help get safer food onto your table. And then just be aware. Just listen to the news, read these articles, and remember that the food space is a very dynamic space. There are new products coming out all the time. There are products that fall off the market, come back on the market with a different label. And so you just really have to put in the effort and the time to study and to read and to learn about the food that you eat.
Dr. James Rogers, thank you so very much for talking with us on the People's Pharmacy today.
And thank you for having me today. I did enjoy it.
You've been listening to Dr. James Rogers, Director of Food Safety Research and Testing at Consumer Reports. He's responsible for leading the food safety and sustainability operations of the organization, including food testing, data analysis, and risk and safety assessments. As acting head of product safety testing, he also oversees the team that assesses safe operation and use of consumer products. The Consumer Reports website is www.consumerreports.org.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Al Wodarski engineered. Dave Graydon edits our interviews. BJ Lederman composed our theme music.
This show is a co-production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, with the People's Pharmacy.
The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by CocoVia Dietary Supplements. CocoVia Cardio Health is offered in both convenient capsule and powder formats, with each serving containing 500 milligrams of cocoa flavanols to support heart health. More information at CocoVia.com.
Today's show is number 1381. You can find it online at peoplespharmacy.com. And you can share your comments on today's interview. You could also reach us through email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com.
Our interviews are available through your favorite podcast provider. This week's podcast has additional information on other places we might find plastics and how we can protect ourselves. You'll find the show on our website on Monday morning.
At peoplespharmacy.com, you could sign up for our free online newsletter and get the latest news about important health stories. When you subscribe, you also have regular access to information about our weekly podcast, so you can find out ahead of time what topics we'll be covering.
In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you for listening. Please join us again next week. Thank you for listening to the People's Pharmacy Podcast. It's an honor and a pleasure to bring you our award-winning program week in and week out. But producing and distributing this show as a free podcast takes time and costs money.
If you like what we do and you'd like to help us continue to produce high-quality, independent healthcare journalism, please consider chipping in.
All you have to do is go to peoplespharmacy.com/donate.
Whether it's just one time or a monthly donation, you can be part of the team that makes this show possible. Thank you for your continued loyalty and support. We couldn't make our show without you.